Welcome to the Thriving Farmer Podcast. I'm your host, Michael Kilpatrick. Our mission is to inspire, educate, and celebrate sustainable farming. We believe that you can build a profitable, sustainable farm that gives you true farm freedom. Join us as we talk to farmers, innovators, educators, and entrepreneurs to glean their top takeaways in business and life. Hey, Thriving Farmers, Michael Kilpatrick here with yet another episode of the Thriving Farmer Podcast. Today, my guest is Josh Holub, who is a systems integration specialist at Sears Greenhouse Solutions. Josh combines his construction and farming expertise to help create sustainable growing spaces that blend technology with smart design. Josh, welcome to the podcast.
Thanks for having me.
So give us a little bit of your background. How did you get into greenhouses?
Yeah, I was actually a builder. I owned a construction company in the 2000s. And around 2008, 2009, when the housing market crashed, cannabis legalized in Colorado. Mm-hmm. And I had HVAC guys, electricians, and builders, and the cannabis guys were just renting warehouses.
Yes.
And so we started building out warehouses, breaking them down to small spaces, figuring out HVAC zones and all these things, and actually ended up owning a cannabis company randomly through the building. And so I got into intensive indoor cultivation, which was very cool, but you never knew if it was daytime or nighttime, and you always had sunglasses on. So you were farming without any of the benefits of at least being outside while farming?
Yes.
So I sold that and started building stuff for farmers. We got pretty deep into permaculture and so started building all kinds of cool permaculture projects, small stuff, big stuff. Yeah. And then I got connected with the Central Rocky Mountain Permaculture Institute, which is up here in the Rocky Mountains outside of Aspen. Year-round greenhouse growing, started learning, building for him. And that evolved into meeting my partner, Mark Plinka, and he had started Sears the year before in about 2011. Mm-hmm. And so in 2012, he and I started working together.
Very cool. Okay, so break down for us kind of the greenhouses that you build. What kind of style do you build, and what are the main features?
Yeah. Our design philosophy is trying to create the most sustainable growing environment possible to keep your operational costs down as the farmer, but also to provide the plants with the most stable environment we can to reduce stressors. And so we orient the greenhouses, our long axis is east to west. We have an insulated north wall. We have an insulated north roof. We often have insulated east and west walls. So we only have glazing really on the south sloping roof and the south wall for the most part.
Yep.
We use high light transmissive glazings. We have ETFE is a new film that we use a lot that we import from Japan. We use acrylics. We also use polycarbonates, depending on the client's need. And then we have designed our own controller. So now we can kind of still have a low-tech greenhouse with high-tech controls. So we can create precision there. Or for some of our we do breeding projects. We used to do a bunch of hemp CBD seed breeding stuff. Yep. We have a lot of cannabis projects. We can do fully sealed, you know, basically indoor, but greenhouse hybrid, heat cool dehue with heat pumps, water reclaim with all of our condensate water. We can be 90% efficient with water. We have all these things we can do.
And that ETFE film, that's 20 years.
It's more than 20. I mean, we would say it's 30 years without degradation, but it might be more, but nobody knows.
Wow. Because it hasn't been around that long.
It has, but we don't know. Okay. You know, there's examples. Mostly architectural. They use it in like European soccer stadiums. There's some cool buildings in New York City right now that are using ETFE. The new SoFi football stadium in LA, think, uses it. Mm-hmm. Those are architectural grade. We actually do use an architectural grade for hail-prone areas. But we also have a full agricultural lineup of ETFE that we can use as well.
Gotcha. Okay. All right. So then very specific design. And then do you guys do anything with earth batteries, climate batteries?
Yeah. So we have a full, we call it a GAT system, ground to air heat transfer. Mark, my partner's German, And Gat maybe sounded good to him as the German. You know, it's not the most eloquent term, but it's stuck and it works. So we have a ground-to-air heat transfer system that we've been developing and refining for a decade. We definitely didn't design the climate battery concept by any means. I learned it mostly from Jerome in Basalt, Colorado at Colorado Rocky Mountain Permaculture Institute. He was having issues. I started fixing his issues. Mark, my partner, is a PhD engineer. So he then puts the math to it. And so we've commercialized it in a way maybe that no one else has. And through our controller, we can now take data readings, air temp on the way in, air temp on the way out, humidity on the way in, humidity on the way out. Then we can adjust how we use the GAT based on the grower's need.
So how important is the airspeed going through that? Is that pretty much the way you transfer heat?
Yeah, it's more – it is airspeed, so there's turbulent or laminar flow that can happen. We really want to create turbulent airflow.
Ah, okay.
We want it to be crazy. If it's just smooth and flows through, you don't get a lot of heat transfer.
Yes.
And just so everyone knows, the idea here is we're intaking air from the greenhouse. On a sunny day, we'll call it hot air in the greenhouse. It goes down underground. The ground pulls the heat out of the air, and the air comes back into the greenhouse cooler and often a little bit drier.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Yeah, so we want turbulent airflow. That's optimal heat transfer. We also size our pipe runs for soil type, temperature, things like that. But oftentimes someone's like, oh, I put a single pipe in the ground for 300 feet. But most of that is really just totally unused. The heat transfer happens in X amount of space, and the rest is just nothing. And so we try and design to have the right amount of length to maximize heat transfer and then get it back into the greenhouse. There's no need for it to keep flowing underground. It creates more pressure and other things that basically reduce the efficiency of the system.
Yeah. So do you just use the same corrugated black pipe that most people are using for that?
Yeah, sleeved four-inch perforated pipe that allows water drain out of the system, but doesn't let any sediment get into the system. Yeah. We often have clients where it might be a wet spring and the water table comes up. They're like, it's buried in water. And we're like, just turn the fan off.
Yeah.
And once you have some flow in the pipes, turn the fan back on. It will drain itself. It is a drain.
Don't
worry about it.
Yeah, we're on a gravel bed basically. So we were going to put this in with the last greenhouse, but the construction guys were afraid because we're on a gravel bed, we would have so much loose soil then underneath the tunnel that the whole thing would have sunk too much. So what our goal is, and again, maybe correct me if I'm wrong on this, because I would like to get your feedback, is that we have to actually go ahead, put the system in, let it sit through a winter, and then come back and build a greenhouse over it.
Oof, we're not, who's got the time?
Well, that was my thought. I was like,
We have installed these in gravel.
Okay.
Gravel doesn't compress. Gravel doesn't compress. So once you lay the pipes, we do it in layers. So we usually do a three-layer system. So layer one goes down, gravel goes in, next layer of pipes, gravel, next layer of pipes, gravel up to grade. We hose it down. You could do some things. You could drive something on it. We would recommend like a certain piece of machine, but not something too big.
Yes. Yeah.
And then with gravel, you go for it because gravel doesn't really compress. We often do like a soil and often a sand, like a slightly sandy soil.
Yeah.
We actually do compress to like a certain rate.
Okay.
Because it really depends. Some clients put a slab over it.
Yeah.
It really matters then.
Yeah.
Some are growing right in the ground, and then it will compact over time, and you just keep adding organic material. Mm-hmm. So it really depends on site.
Okay.
But we almost never let it sit for a full year. Not saying that's a bad idea. It's the natural compression, I suppose.
Yeah.
But our construction is construction, and it's hard to leave things sit out for a whole winter.
Correct.
And just be in it.
Okay, so now here's another question on that is what zone, growing zones, do you find really effective? Because from what I understand, the further south you go, the less efficient slash less. Yeah. Okay, so share your thoughts on that.
This for us is almost across the board for our like standard greenhouse design principles.
Okay.
We are in Colorado. I live at almost 9,000 feet of elevation. Our primary design principle was like, in Europe, it's never that hot and it's never that cold and it's never real sunny. And, you know, it's just never anything. Mm-hmm. And in Colorado, it's like, we are cold in the winter. It is super intense sunlight. Mm-hmm. It's super hot in the sun. We have all the extremes.
Yeah.
And so for us, and really north, so we have a lot of success in, I mean, we're building, especially in the Southwest, there's way more temperature fluctuations. Yes. But in the Southeast,
yes,
this stuff starts to make less sense, where maybe a traditional greenhouse might make more sense.
Yeah.
We see lettuce growers in Canada using our stuff, right?
Yes, yeah.
We're doing a bunch in Minnesota. We're doing a lot of work in Idaho right now, Washington State, you know. So it's kind of the northern half of, mm-hmm. of the U.S., and into Canada is really makes sense. We can oftentimes make the case for it in more southern locations, but it's maybe a little bit harder to justify. So
yeah,
in a warm, humid place, we can't cool very much with the GATT system. And oftentimes there's minimal need for heating. And so we would still run the numbers and see, but it might make sense, it might not. And we would just be very upfront with whoever we're talking yeah. to that there's no need to do this.
Yeah, so we're in zone 6B now. And we are, I'd say winters, I'd say 75% of the days in the winter are cloudy.
Right.
It's not that cold. I would say, you know, maybe we'll get days, you know, 20 degrees. I'd say nights, the coldest we typically get is zero. We've seen down to minus yep. five. But this year we got 2 5-degree days, and that was the coldest. So yep. our like right now today it's 70 degrees out.
Right, which is insane.
Yes.
The next part of this conversation is, what do you need in the greenhouse? So
correct.
we have a lot of people who are just growing like a backyard tropical greenhouse.
Yes.
They've got bananas yeah. mm-hmm. and they've got citrus. And there the goal is just it can never freeze. That's
correct.
The hard rule,
yeah.
right?
Yeah, yeah.
And with a GATT system, pretty much anywhere in the U.S., like even in the northern climates, we'll never drop below 45 degrees with the GATT system. It can be gray
yeah.
all the time, and we're in pretty good shape there.
Yeah.
If you're just growing tropicals, like that might be fine. Maybe you throw in a backup heater and never use it. Maybe you don't.
Yeah.
But if you're trying to produce lettuce in January for production and you want 65 degrees minimum or something, then the GATT system is not going to do what you need it to do there. And then we can run the math and say, well, in the swing seasons and with help cooling in the summer, is it going to help enough to be worthwhile? And if so, is that in 3 years? Is that in 9 years? What's your energy mm-hmm. rate? You know, we have all these things we can do, and then we can make the recommendation.
Gotcha. So let's talk your design's a little bit different on how you're building with the insulated walls. What does you typically, do you have a typical like cost per square foot that you start to talk to people about just to make sure they're in the ballpark before you guys start your designs?
Yeah. We usually say for a vented greenhouse, that we are probably around $125 a square foot for materials.
Okay.
And then we don't do the construction, but we say you probably double that for construction to be safe.
Gotcha. Okay.
And so we are by no means a cheap greenhouse, but we are also not intending to be a cheap greenhouse. We are
correct.
You know, we call it an insurance policy. We call it a lot of things, but a cheap greenhouse is not one of them.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, we have market farmers who start growing in January.
Yeah.
So when the farmers markets open in April, they have tomatoes.
Correct. Yeah.
And so it's really, it's all about use case and what the client needs.
Yeah. And so I've seen a bunch of, if you're on your website, which is CERESGS.com. So CERESGS.com.
Yeah. She's, I'll tell the name is Ceres and she's the, Roman goddess of agriculture.
Okay. Thank you for correcting me. Yes.
Like cereal.
Yes.
Series, yeah.
Yeah, so CERES. Okay, gotcha. You guys have a lot of information there. We've got a bunch of blog stuff, so if you guys are interested, definitely head on over there. And I'm assuming you have people doing all sorts of things, aquaculture, bench growing. Sounds like you've got a lot of people doing cannabis and CBG.
Yeah, we have the whole gamut. We started doing small backyard greenhouses. We still do small backyard greenhouses.
Okay.
Up to, you know, 50,000 square foot sealed cannabis facilities, big ag projects, the whole thing. A lot of aquaponics, a lot of school projects. We do a lot of educational projects. That's a core belief of ours, is get the greenhouses into schools, get kids into the sunlight, working with plants. We think that's a cool, that's a cool avenue. Yeah, it's all over the place.
Yeah, and you even did a coffee house.
We did just design in Northern California. We have a client, small, but he wants to sort out greenhouse growing for coffee. And so that is now operational. He doesn't even live on site, but with our controller, we have access all the time. He has access all the time, so we can monitor and control it. Am I advocating for that as the best way to farm? I am not, but it is possible. Easier with trees than with annuals.
Yeah, so I'm looking at the picture, and this is like literally on the side of a mountain somewhere.
Yeah, yeah.
Wow.
Yeah, he has power, and he has water, and there's sunlight, and so we can do our thing.
Wow, that is something else. I mean, okay, all right, more power to them.
It's interesting, we actually have a few of those. We have a completely sealed greenhouse in just outside of Austin, Texas. It's about 400 square feet, so the technology based on the size of the greenhouse doesn't make a lot of sense, because it's actually like our large-scale sealed technology. But a lot of these guys are testing out the operational value of this. One's microgreens, one's coffee, to see if it works the way they want it to decide if they want to scale or not.
Gotcha. Yeah. Yeah.
Hello, dear listeners. As the green shoots of spring emerge, signaling planting season in full swing, isn't it the perfect time to bring new life onto the land? At shop.growingfarmers.com, a treasure trove awaits to transform even the most forgotten corner of your space into a vibrant oasis. Imagine lush elderberries and willows swaying in the breeze, or the sweet promise of homegrown strawberries and the hearty depth of rhubarb pie made from your harvest. Perhaps you've pondered over the joy of harvesting your own potatoes. Well, ponder no more. Our small business is dedicated to bringing you an exceptional variety of plant material to make these dreams a reality. We're shipping daily, ensuring that your planting ambitions are supported with timely and quality deliveries right to your doorstep. So if you've been eyeing that sunny spot by the fence, or considering how to fill that quiet corner of your yard, look no further. Our perennial selections are not just plants. They're future harvests, memories, and the beginning of a more sustainable lifestyle right from your own land. Visit shopgrowingfarmers.com today and make the first step towards a greener, more fruitful farmstead or garden. We can't wait to grow with you.
What would you say the biggest principles you've learned in greenhouse design over your time in working with them has been?
Oh, man. Yeah, the biggest lesson that we've learned is try not to skimp in the beginning, which is very hard for a lot of people, because finding the capital for this is difficult.
Yeah.
But the lesson, you know, over and over again is, I went cheap and I've got major mildew issues. I'm having major bug problems. It's not working.
Yeah. Because the very interesting thing about this system is it also helps dry the greenhouse out, which is so helpful. And that keeps those diseases.
I mean, it's the climate battery along with all the other aspects. You know, we can offer EC fans, so exhaust fans that can dim 0 to 10 versus on off fans. You know, little things like that can end up making a big difference. You know, do I get the shade system or do I not get the shade system? Get the shade system. You know, it costs more and you have to install it. That's all very real, but my greenhouse isn't overheating. I'm holding 40% more heat in the winter because it's also an energy curtain. I have so much more control over my space. So it's really hard. And even people who want to do it right oftentimes can't because the investment involved, but our clients who are able to pull it off and do it right are hugely successful. It's really cool to see.
Yeah. Yeah. This is all about spending the money up front compared to having to pay the heating bill every month.
That's right.
Gotcha.
Well, that's your OPEX, and that's obviously part of this.
Yeah.
But it's also about plant health. It's like, do we have the systems to keep the plants healthy for whatever it is we're trying to do? That's the real driver.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. Okay. Talk a little bit about like your time in the cannabis industry, because I know that's a very interesting space. And recently it's changed recently, especially you had this CBD craze that what happened is it 2019, 2020?
Cannabis was never our core value by any means. Cannabis just happened to be an industry that came into being while we were evolving as a business as well and had money to invest. And so we found ourselves kind of at the cutting edge of greenhouse technology in the world cannabis space. And we talked to clients over the world. Mm. The biggest takeaway from the whole cannabis and hemp thing is design a greenhouse that is flexible. Hemp was a big deal for 3 years. We had 4 years, maybe. We had a bunch of guys growing clones. So that was just mothers in the greenhouse, and they were cloning, rooting clones, shipping them out, making a bunch of money. Lasted for 2 years. The cool thing is those greenhouses are viable for a lot of things because we kind of designed them based on our standard design principles. Mm-hmm. The cannabis houses are more interesting because the ones that are really – cannabis is a very difficult and cutthroat industry at this point.
Correct.
And is less and less of our work now. But the people who did it correctly, who did fully sealed, full controls, you know, we're dimming LED lights based on sunshine levels, they are the ones who are not just still in business, but thriving. And we have several of those clients who are expanding to other states. You know, New Jersey's a new market. These guys have a built program. They have a greenhouse that works. They know what they're doing, and they just replicate it, and it works. And so it's been cool to see the recognition, like, this program works. We spent the money. We've made our money back. We're going to do it again. But cannabis was cool. It pushed us really hard, really fast. It was a wild ride, but it was really cool for us developing technology and sorting out. And now we take the controller that we developed for cannabis, and we deploy it in every single greenhouse. So now, like, my, you know, organic CSA market farmer outside of Madison, Wisconsin, she's got the controller. You know, we can see it. She can see it. We can make recommendations. She says, I've got the heater at this set point and the gap at this set point. What do you guys think?
Yeah.
And then we're like, well, we actually just switched these two, so this is going to be more efficient.
Yeah.
And then we track it, and we track the data, and then we watch what happens.
Gotcha. Okay. And then are there any new markets that you guys are kind of diving into more heavily?
We are, you know, education has been really cool, and we've always been in it, but It's starting to become more and more of a thing. That's been cool. We're doing a big 7 greenhouse project on the south side of Chicago. It's a nonprofit organization. It's mostly education, food focused, but it will also be production.
Okay.
That's very cool. You know, these are food deserts where there's money's not easily available, but Available. And we're plopping a big old greenhouse right in the middle of a food desert, which is really cool. And then we're moving into all kinds of ag projects. And so what we find is our greenhouse works really well as either research or like a hub of a farm. You know, so you don't have to go super big with it. But then you can kind of explode it into the fields come whatever your planting season is. You know, where I live, I don't get to put anything out until June 4th or something. But, you know, it's just this little pocket of life that whenever planting season begins, it can just push everything outside. And then a lot of our clients will leave like cucumbers and maybe tomatoes in the house. And they're just, you know, you're fruit and cucumbers for 8 months or something. Tomatoes will go year round if you keep lights on them.
And because what you've got here too, you've got your Vesta designs as well, which are kind of integrated living space, greenhouse. Talk a little bit about that.
Yeah, so that's our newest product. I was a home builder for a long time, and we've gone way into growing, which is amazing. And I actually ran an organic farm for several years. Like, I'm deep into it. But I've always been really into efficient home building. And Mark, my partner, when he remodeled his house in Boulder, it was one of the 10 most efficient houses in the country, probably. And so we've taken all of our greenhouse knowledge and the house knowledge I have from previous life and integrated into the Vesta, which is almost like the metal earthship. I mean, I hesitate to say earthship, You know what that is, but it's a house with an attached greenhouse. It's all of our same suppliers. So it's steel frame, it's insulated metal panels. But it's a little bit of a living house that allows us to grow in the greenhouse. The greenhouse will heat the house when the time is right. It has the same controller in it, So it can sense when the greenhouse has excess heat. The house wants heat. It can vent windows to let them in. So, you know, this is the constant evolution, kind of being creative because it's fun for us, and also opening new markets because we're a business just the same. So.
Yeah, absolutely.
We're just completing our first Vesta build in Southwest Colorado as we speak. It's actually being commissioned. The controller is being commissioned right now. So it's a brand new product. We've got like four different offerings, a little ADU, a middle, mm-hmm. big one. But we've seen a lot of interest, maybe more than anything else right now, and really cool for farmers because it's actually a cheap house to build as far as houses go. And it has a greenhouse on it. So it's not really a production greenhouse. It's not quite big enough for that, but it's a cool way to get into a greenhouse and a house.
Well, but also too, for most small farms, they just need a very small space to start heating for early crops. And then they may go out to another one. So that first month or 6 weeks, and I mean, all winter. I mean, so the other thing, like you have fig trees or you have rosemary or, you know, all these other crops, which you need like mother plants from too. So they can all live there all winter.
Oh yeah. I mean, and our standard offering is, the greenhouse is 12 foot by 40 foot. I think it's 600, am I doing my math? 500, 600 square feet. It's plenty big to keep mothers, like you're saying, alive, something you're going to clone off of, or to starts. If you're in trays, I mean, you can do a lot in there.
Absolutely. Yeah. Very cool. So let's talk about like on scale, what kind of projects are doing these really large?
Yeah. I mean, what I think the nice thing about what we do is everything we do is modular.
Okay.
And that's very intentional. So for starters, when I started in cannabis and warehouses, it might have been a 10,000 square foot warehouse. And some guys were like, I'm just blowing up the warehouse. And they had 8,000-9,000 square feet of plants in a room, which to me is like danger zone.
Yeah.
If you bring in a plant, it's got a mite or something, you're in big trouble. Mm. And so I started breaking down those rooms into smaller rooms for more control, for biosecurity reasons. And so we design, you know, the biggest greenhouse we really design for is 4,500 square feet in a single house. And we rarely do it. It's in special occasions. But, you know, oftentimes a project might have 11 or, you know, 12 greenhouses, but they're all individual greenhouses. So you can set points however you want. So they can all be the same. You can be running totally different things. They can have different lighting schedules. They can have different lighting intensities. So, you know, our standard offerings are 23 foot deep single slope or a 30 foot deep north to south offset gable. Those often are 40 feet long to 100 feet long. You know, 30 by 100, 3,000 square footer is very normal. And, you know, you can really produce. It's cool to see what you can do in a 3,000 square foot greenhouse.
Yeah. Especially with the perfect controlled climate too, as well.
Yeah. I mean, we've actually, so for our sealed buildings, we actually call them a sun chamber.
Okay. Yeah.
And the reason we did that is, I mean, we made up a word, you know, but really the idea is to differentiate, like, this is not a greenhouse that you're used to. And so we still call our vented greenhouses a high yield kit, but a greenhouse nonetheless, but it is really beyond a greenhouse. The range of what greenhouse means is a little too broad. And so we're just like a highly controlled sunlit growing environment, you know, whatever you want to call it. And so it could be a high tunnel hoop house, you know, that's a greenhouse. This is a greenhouse. They do very different things. And, you know, sometimes people are like, that's really expensive. You're like, well, here's why. And then sometimes some people are like, this is what I've been looking for the whole time. I'm so glad I found you.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. Yeah. And if you go to your Instagram too, you got a lot of pictures of some of your projects and rendering and stuff like that too.
Yeah, I mean, every greenhouse, like production, not production, they're almost all growing a banana tree in the corner because they can, you know, there's a fig somewhere.
Some lemons.
Yeah, it citrus is easy, so people throw in some citrus, but it's really fun to see what people do. And some of the people are just playing around, right? They just build a backyard greenhouse. Those are like incredibly beautiful, you know, nice pavers. It's just a chill space. That's great. We love that. Our driver is really food production. We want to land food. Like, we want to grow food right where the people are. And so we have people in, you know, Gunnison, Colorado, which is one of the coldest places in the country, if not the coldest place. We've got a production lettuce farmer there. There's no food there. You couldn't get fresh food, you know, and she's cranking out lettuce. In a vented greenhouse, which is really hard, you know, and with sunlight. So we need to cool in the winter, but it's negative 20 outside, and we have to intake air. So there's all these like intricacies, but we're learning and figuring it out and helping people grow food in their neighborhoods, which is really cool.
Yeah. So talk to a little bit about kind of how this integrates with permaculture and kind of like your roots there.
Yeah. I mean, it's interesting because I've strayed from local materials and things like that, because we determined that having a consistent production model that can be built quickly is sometimes more efficient than building the thing with your local materials. It's going to be slightly less beautiful. We're going to last a really long time. It's going to work. So in that regard, what we try and do is we're a little off principle with permaculture. We understand that, but we're here. We're NASA. We're like space control or whatever we call it. And every one of our clients is a spaceship or a satellite. Mm. If you have issues, you call us. You know, we've got 30 people in the office. We are here lifetime. We are here to support the goal. We're a family-owned company, right?
Yeah.
The goal is, are you succeeding? Are you producing food, or are you teaching kids the way you want it? Is it too hot? Let's work on it. So we have this long-term sustainability goal that is very much permaculture-oriented. You know, I always try and land these things right in zone one or two around someone's house. I try and get it close because you got to be in it every day or every other day. Mm-hmm. And then it can drive everything else. And that's cool. You know, if you're taking cuttings off raspberries, you know, bring them in the greenhouse, build up your stock. If you're whatever you're doing, you can just bring it back into like the greenhouse, nourish it, let it grow, and then send it back out into your farm or your property, however you need. So it plugs in pretty well in that regard. Mm-hmm. But again, we're not doing rammed earth. There's no hempcrete involved here. This is a reproducible thing that you can buy and we can ship to your house.
So then you have the manufacturing done one location and then you just ship out the completed product.
No, we are not a manufacturer.
Okay.
We have manufacturing partners.
Gotcha.
And so at times that's a disadvantage, but for the most part, it's an advantage.
Correct.
We have our main steel supplier has production in Arizona and Tennessee. So if you're on the East Coast, we can ship from Tennessee. During COVID, when there were supply chain issues, we did not have the issues in the same way because we were able to source stuff from other places. Mm-hmm. And so we work closely with our partners to build the product. I mean, the majority of our work is engineering and design. So we're engineers, mm-hmm. we're architects and designers, really, all with a farming sidebar.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. Anything else you'd like to share with folks before we go?
Yeah, I think one important thing that we like talking about now, especially with the ETFE option, is UV in growing spaces.
Okay.
What we've learned, one reason we use polycarbonate somewhat less, even though it's very affordable and very durable, is that UV in the greenhouse is amazing for a lot of reasons. It's a mild stressor on your plants in a beneficial way, but mildews, molds don't like it. Pests don't like it. And so we see greenhouses that are using our UV transmissive glazings are significantly healthier. Plant life is way healthier with the same amount of work, no change. We had a farmer here in Boulder. We reglazed from a triple layer polycarbonate to a double layer ETFE. Her greenhouse is like a living jungle. I mean, it is star fruit, dragon fruit. And it's kind of wild. She has a full farm. It's called the Golden Hoof. It's amazing. We reglazed and the greenhouse totally changed. The mildews were gone. The bugs were gone. It was just thriving with just a glazing change. So we try and push, depending on the situation, UV transmissive glazings, because that's giving the plants the sunlight that they actually want. And it shows in the response of the plants.
Very cool.
Cool. It's very cool. And this is just an evolution. We chose a material, then we put it in the field, and then it works. And now we are heavily designing with ETFE at this point.
Yeah, because that's something that we never, you know, it's not something that is talked about.
Right, at all.
Correct.
And so again, we come from a scientific background. Mark is a PhD chemical engineer. We're thinking about a lot of this stuff. Mm-hmm. And sometimes it doesn't matter. You know, sometimes we're like, oh, this is going to be the next big thing in greenhouses. And it isn't, you know, flop. And sometimes you're like, oh my God, this film is incredible. And right now we're on one of those pushes and we'll find downfalls. But right now it's working and super durable. Plants like it. And so, you know, and then who knows what's next? That's kind of how we work, is we just play around, find the things, and some work and some don't. But yeah, UV light in greenhouses is a very good thing.
Okay, very cool. Well, Josh, thank you so much for your time today. Appreciate you coming on and sharing this deep dive into all things controlled greenhouse space. Fascinating. Thank you.
My pleasure. Thanks a lot.
So there you have it, another episode in the books. So I'd love if you would hop on over to iTunes and leave us a rating and a review. Those mean everything to us. We love to hear what you're thinking. If you have a podcast guest that you can recommend, please pop on over to the Thriving Farmer Podcast website and leave us a review. That's thrivingfarmerpodcast.com.